Stephen Reinbold from Longview Community College is going to be speaking on evolution. Do the eyes have it?
Charles Darwin expressed wonder at the eye and pondered if it could not be explained by evolution by natural selection, then his theory would be declared false. Since then, much has been written on scenarios for evolution of the eye. In the mollusk, there is represented a very, very plausible series of eyes that might correspond to stages in evolution from pinhole camera in the nautilus to the camera eye of octopus that rivals in complexity the vertebrate eye. The eye has come up again in debates on intelligent design. B takes up eye evolution, conceding that anatomical eye evolution can be accounted for by gradual evolution. It includes the sequence reactions required to convert absorption of photons by rhodopsin into nervous impulse and restore rhodopsin as an example of irreducible complexity. Perhaps B is misleading in suggesting that the reaction sequence in eyes had to evolve from scratch because similar pathways exist for other sensory neural pathways. However, B no doubt would contend that an antecedent pathway would still leave the origin of the first complex sensory pathways to be explained and that it would be irreducibly complex. Critics of intelligent design claim the vertebrate eye shows poor design compared to the octopus eye because light in the former must pass through ganglion cells before reaching the photoreceptor cells of the back of the retina. Skeptics might suggest that poor design means no God or one that leaves secondary causes to finish his work for him. Seems overly speculative to suggest that therefore man, the presumed crown of creation, was shortchanged because he does not see as well as the octopus. An overview of eyes includes eye spots seen in organisms as simple as flatworms. Also included are the familiar compound eyes of insects and other arthropods. We look at compound eyes. Individual omatidia make up the compound eye. Each omatidium acts in many cases as its own individual unit, particularly when the apposition compound eye does act as individual units with light that hits an omatidium only stimulating photoreceptors in that omatidium. And then the vertebrate eye, notice particularly that the sclerochoroid and inner retina are the three main layers of the eye. And the vertebrate eye, that you can't see it here, I'll show it later, there are ganglion cells on the very inner surface that converge on the optic disc, which forms the optic nerve. The actual photoreceptor parts then are to the outer layer of the retina. Looking at the evolution of eyes, there is a putative family tree, or phylogeny. Some protista have well-developed light sensors, and eyes appear soon after the evolution of the animal kingdom. Curiously, even some box jellyfish or cubozoa of the primitively radially symmetrical group have eyes with well-developed lenses. Eyes appear in the bilaterally symmetrical animals in the protostome and vertebrate branch, including the phylum Arthropoda, the jointed leg animals, annelids, segmented worms, and mollusca, bivalve snails, and cephalopods. Of course, eyes are characteristic of the vertebrates in the deuterostome group. In a book devoted to the subject of eye evolution, Andrew Parker suggested that the sudden ability to see was the spark for the Cambrian explosion, but he was taken to task by Simon Conway Morris. Conway Morris states the eyes evolved many times over many steps. If Parker is correct, then the eye evolved early in the Cambrian, and then it triggered an extremely rapid evolution of various phyla, the largest of which all exhibit eyes. According to Parker, the fossil record indicates that image-forming eyes probably evolved first in the arthropods, probably trilobites. Most phyla, although simple photoreception is almost universally present, no eyes evolved, but evolved later in annelida, mollusca, onychophora, and chordata, including the conodonts, the smallest of which had eyes large in proportion to their bodies. Conway Morris sees eyes as a factor, but not an especially important factor in the rapid evolution in the early Cambrian. And just skip that one. This shows the complex eye sensor of a dinoflagellate. Actually has a lens-like structure. That is a conodont with large eyes proportioned to its body. This is a larval lamprey, which should be correspond to about the simplest of vertebrates. Note the eye to the left. And this shows vertebrate phylogeny with, over on the left, the urochordata and cephalochordata, sea squirts and amphioxus, if you're familiar with those terms, and then the vertebrates, including the lampreys. And most vertebrates have eyes or secondarily lost them. Two views have been held in regard to eye evolution. Gehring is a leading advocate of the single origin, monophyletic origin, and much of the eye-building genetic apparatus with subsequent divergent evolution. Support of a single origin of eyes is genetic data that show the mammalian gene can cause eyes to form in insects. According to this divergence model, one or a few ancestral eye genes, for example, the regulatory gene PAX6 evolved in the ancient bilateria, ancestral bilateria, resulting in the first eye spot. The ancestral eye then evolved into various camera type eyes and various compound eyes. Eyeless phyla are therefore degenerate or fail to develop eye spots further. The second view exposes multiple origins for eyes, that is, polyphyletic origin. A more basic set of genes allowed multiple origins converging on a few basic eye types. On the basis of molecular phylogeny, Oakley and Cunningham showed that the paired compound eyes of said seed shrimp evolved within an otherwise eyeless group of ostracoda. The eyes of other crustaceans, notably the malacostra, crabs, crayfish, lobsters, evolved independently. For some reason, this phylogeny left the ostracoda off, which is probably placed here. But still, Insecta is the outgroup for this phylogeny. Insecta, of course, have compound eyes. But then the crustacean eyes almost surely evolved independently, and the Malacostrica are definitely have compound eyes. According to this convergence view, the ancestral animal had a number of genes, including regulatory genes and opsins, and the key factor in eye development was not the presence or absence of genes, but a balance of many genes variously recruited to form the camera type eye independently in three or four distinct lineages and compound eyes in several lineages independently. That shows the cuttlefish, which has a camera type eye, and the cephalopod mollusk. And once again, the camera type eye of vertebrates, and looking a little closer, in this view, light passes from bottom to top, so that light passes through ganglion cells, which then send their fibers to converge on the optic nerve, and then to the inner segment of the photoreceptors where light is actually perceived. Fernald gives an overview of eye evolution from a genetic standpoint, discussing the three protein families most associated with eyes: opsins, crystallins, and regulatory genes that code for transcription factors. He suggests that the common ancestor of vertebrates and mollusks was perhaps 750 million years ago, said that about 70% of eye genes are commonly expressed in the vertebrate and octopus, and 97% of these are estimated to have occurred in the ancestral bilateria. He states that 875 genes are conserved, which might have a common regulatory network recruited at least twice. Vertebrates use ciliary opsin in photoreceptor cells, whereas invertebrates use rhabdomeric opsin. Fernald stated that the use of homologous genes to build non-homologous structures may be at the heart of understanding eye evolution and evolutionary processes more generally. The ciliary opsins of vertebrates can be introduced by the well-studied function of rhodopsin found in the photoreceptors of vertebrates called rods. Light would actually, again, pass from bottom to top. Light passes through the inner segment to the outer segment, a modified cilium with stacks of membranes. The membranes are studded with many copies of the protein opsin, which is attached to a molecule of 11-cis retinal. Retinal absorbs light and changes shape, causing a shape change in opsin, leading to a nervous impulse being transmitted to the brain. Retinal must be converted back to its original shape before it can absorb more light. Cone opsins also have retinal, but differ from rhodopsin at each other by a few amino acid sequences in their sequence. Human cone opsins maximally absorb red at 558 nanometers, green at 508 nanometers, and violet at 558 nanometers, green at 531 nanometers, and blue at 419 nanometers. O'Connell et al. Found that the chicken retina contains four cone opsins and rhodopsin. Chicken red absorbs at 571, green at 508, blue at 455, and violet, they have four cone opsins, at 415. Chicken green opsin is similar to vertebrate rhodopsins, normally used in black and white vision, with a wavelength of 500 nanometers. They suggested that the ancestral opsin evolved by gene duplications into four opsins, as represented in chicken. Vertebrate rhodopsins diverged from green cone opsin later, after the divergence of the ancestral pigment into four groups. Animals that acquired the ability to see color, at least at the stage of the lowest vertebrates, but later most mammals lost color vision. Yokoyama described site-specific amino acid sequence changes that change wavelength specificity in opsin. He described the dichromatic cone vision of New World monkeys, normally resulting from two different opsin genes. Old World monkeys, apes, and humans are trichromatic, three cone opsins. Human red opsin evolved from green opsin by three amino acid changes. Aaron et al. Reported the discovery of a ciliary opsin in an invertebrate, the ragworm platinarius. This worm has rhabdomeric opsin in its retina, as expected for an invertebrate, but ciliary opsin similar to that of vertebrates in its brain. They state that any features specifically shared between them as a result of common evolutionary heritage necessarily existed in the last common ancestor of all animals of bilateral symmetry. This opsin is expressed in ciliary structures in the brain. They believe that our opsins in vertebrates persist in the retinal ganglion cells. Bellingham et al. Found a melanopsin, which appears like it could be an R opsin, in the retinal ganglion cells of chickens that functions in the circadian rhythm of pupillary light reflex. In addition, non-mammalian vertebrates have an additional melanopsin, which is not used in the retina for vision. But mammals only have one melanopsin. He suggests early mammals lost one melanopsin and two cone opsins, coinciding with a nocturnal phase of mammalian evolution. This is just to show the compound eye, the omatidium. Note the structure in the middle of the omatidium, which is a rhabdomere, hence called rhabdomeric opsin. Another protein family associated with the eye is a crystalline family, especially found in the lens. Crystallines must exist for a long time in high concentrations. They may have evolved from stressor proteins, then the beta crystallines, then the gamma crystallines, which are eye-specific, perhaps originally in the retina, and finally in the lens. Mammals have gamma crystallins A to F. Fish have gamma crystallins M. Gamma N may have had an ancestral function in the retina and later was recruited for the lens. The highly accommodating lenses of birds require softer structure and incorporated taxon-specific crystallins, often coming from enzymes, hence enzyme crystallins. This is just to note that gamma N crystallins are found in mice in the lens nucleus and retinal ganglion cells. Primates have lost gamma. Okay, the most surprising eye-related genes are the regulatory genes that include PAX6, which can initiate eye development in diverse species. Gehring, perhaps the strongest, made perhaps the strongest case for all eye genes evolving from a common ancestral eye. He identified PAX6 as a master control gene for eye development and proposed a new theory about the monophyletic origin of the eyes and evolution. PAX6 can induce ectopic eyes, that is, somewhere other than on the head, in both insects and vertebrates. Not only can PAX6 genes induce eye formation ectopically on antennae, legs, and wings, but mouse PAX6 causes ectopic eyes in Drosophila. PAX6-related genes have been found in all bilateria analyzed so far, ranging from planarians to humans. This is a phylogeny, just to note the echinoderms down here, the tunicates, and Lancelotter amphioxus, basically a deuterostome phylogeny. Since echinoderms have shared deuterostome ancestry, the phylum Chordata is of particular interest to examine the recently decoded genome of the sea urchin. Sea urchin has hundreds of genes homologous to mammalian sensory genes, including eye genes. Photoreceptor genes are apparently expressed in the tube feet along the bottom of the sea urchin. Does a sea urchin really need hundreds of sensory genes with no eyes, ears, or nose? Did the deuterostome ancestor evolve eye genes without eyes, or did it have eyes, and then the sea urchin lose eyes, and then you retain these genes for a different use? Or did the sea urchin share a common pool of genes common to animals, which sometimes in certain balance develop eyes, oftentimes used in unrelated structures? That's just to show the amphioxus, which also has PAX genes. Broadbrook and Englert reported the mouse has 9 PAX genes. Many of these same genes are used in development of the mammalian kidney. Thus, these regulatory genes exhibit pleiotropy being expressed in many different tissues. Compared to Gehring, Broadbeck and Englert have suggested a different view of master control genes and hierarchies and prefer the concept of circuits and networks instead. They state that evolution is conservative as components and networks are redeployed in different species and different organs. Also, evolution is exploratory, not using identical modules again, but different combinations of factors to build additional feedback loops and additional components and abandoning others. Conway Morris refers to this as inherency, whereby the same building blocks of complex structures are available for being recruited for new tasks, so emergence relies more on co-option redeployment than on invention. Could it be that the ancestor of deuterostomes was a bottom-seeding dweller in the dark, perhaps? Even something like the modern hagfish, which has rudimentary eyes. Eyes that evolved in the dark might also be expected to have a reflective layer behind the retina, as nocturnal animals do today, and hence the photoreceptors being at the back of the retina to receive the reflected light was not such a poor design after all. The total light path would be less obstructed by ganglion cells if the light goes through the ganglion layer once, then to the photoreceptors, some passing on the reflective layer, and then without further interference back to the photoreceptors. Mammals probably evolved in nocturnal niches, while dinosaurs dominated the daytime. Could mammals have evolved without the retina rearmost design? Okay, now in conclusions, these are my own, not necessarily those of the authors I cited. In conclusion, much research has gone into satisfying Darwin's anxiety about the complexity of the eye. The evidence gives a plausible series of steps for the evolution of camera type and compound eyes. Do eyes demonstrate gradual evolution? One starts to wonder why the earliest eumetazoid gene is capable of forming eyes, and why the visually challenged sea urchin is loaded with hundreds of genes homologous to those expressed in vertebrate eyes. This has emerged an important theme in the field of evo-devo, or evolutionary development, so that complex new forms do not require many new mutations or many new genes, but instead small changes to existing genes and development plans, a sort of toolkit. Major events in evolution may not depend on new genes or the appearance of new body parts, but the right ecological situation to allow new expression of genes already present. So it appears to me, by making macroevolutionary events less dependent on new random mutations, that they have pushed back and shortened the evolution of the time for the evolution of the toolkit, in fact, closing one gap and opening another. And I think it would be testable to see if there has been an increase in types of genes, and lots, certainly duplications and loss of genes, but increase in types of genes since the Cambrian. Okay, so do the eyes have any questions of evolution? Surely on the anatomical level, Darwin has been vindicated. In fact, the toolkit really strengthens the case for common descent. However, on the cellular level, many questions remain, and proponents of intelligent design can be expected to still say nay.
We have a little bit of time for questions.
Professor Conway Morris.
Thank you. There are two comments. Thank you for a very comprehensive review. There's a danger sometimes, as you were with sea urchins, when you're looking at extremely derived forms, both their pentaradial symmetry and the possibility that there'd be very radical reorganizations in the nervous system. So I would be cautious about trying to extrapolate too far back. The other aspect we do know about some of the kind of forces, at least in one case of the opioid, they have reinvented the compound eye. So these ideas related to dark, I could almost echo what you were saying about Andrew Parker's work. I would, again, be fairly cautious about the extrapolation from living day organisms. We do know a little bit more about the very early super strength history and possibility. The other thing, just again, parenthesis, is, of course, we have eye spots even in prokaryotes using what appear to be bacteria.
Yes. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Whenever I finish talking, it always falls.
Yeah.
Just not to make
sure. Thank you. Yes. Jim. Yes. Yeah.
I'm by no means an expert, but I think you could find extra strength in the melanopsis story that you brought up in terms of these intrinsically photoreceptive retroganglion cells mediating the circadian rhythm. Further work has gone on to, you know, sort of pick apart the molecular mechanism and the signaling cascade within those cells, and how finding that it's you have this very invertebrate-looking system inside of a vertebrate eye in mice, rats, and humans. Yeah. So I think that's a strong example of cellular molecular mechanisms following an invertebrate pattern in a vertebrate system.
Yes. Right. Again, it strengthens the case for common descent, though it might at the same time strengthen the case for divergent evolution, but not necessarily. That is, if both of those rhabdomeric and ciliary options were present in their earliest bilaterity.
Thank you.
Yes.
Some years ago, Thompson, in his column from Marginelli, made a distinction between three means of evolution: patterns, process, and mechanisms. Your presentation is a very good illustration of the evidence of evolution of patterns of the RBI. It does, as far as I can tell, it doesn't really address the process except by inference or mechanism. So in that regard, it obviously does respond to Darwin's view of gradual evolution, but it doesn't really yet, in my view, at least from what I see here that you've done, address the mechanism by which this pattern has come about.
Well, I don't know if this is a partial answer. I think somewhere in my hurry to get through, I didn't mention, I think at one time I mentioned there is frequent duplications of genes which can free them up for new uses. In fact, with the enzyme crystallins, where the gene is actually continues to make the enzyme as normal use, but a duplication then frees up a copy of the gene to make the enzyme, if you will, that's really it's used in the lens. So clearly duplication is an important part of that. I guess my contention was, does duplication really allow the creation of entirely new types of genes, or as opposed to freeing up genes for new functions? Yes, but I wouldn't call them radically. You know, they are new functions, but I don't see that fully accounting for evolution of new structures.
So does this mean you disagree with Simon Conway Morris that the eye can evolve from different, fundamentally different structures that towards the same function? Is that what you're saying? You think they've all got a common pool of genes that have descended from a single progenitor?
I think the better statement would be the quote I gave of Fernald that says homologous genes are used to make non-homologous structures, meaning that it's the same set of genes present probably in all the bilateria that sometimes are recruited to make, can be recruited to make eyes as well as other things, and then again in some other branch recruited to make eyes again. So I don't see a complete polarity between the monophyletic and polyphyletic origin, because the difference is whether you think of PAX6 as an eye gene, in which case that would be a monophyletic origin, but clearly it's not. It's a gene that's used in development of other structures as well, the brain and even the kidney. So that the set of genes is homologous, but it can be used to make non-homologous structures such as cephalopod eye and vertebrae eye. Is that answering your question? So I don't see the two as necessarily completely polarized. The difference is whether there are eye genes or really it's a set of genes that has a number of functions.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Did you make any comment about the fish, the blind fish in Mammoth Cave that lose their vision and whether that function is taken over by another sensory system?
Well, yeah. Fish in general have very good chemical senses, and they have a lateral line. I don't know. I'm sure it is, and I might point out that such fish are treated very thoroughly in Andrew Parker's book. Read that as far as the development of their coloration and so forth, or loss of coloration, actually, if you. Yes, other senses are used in compensation, I guess you could say.
Thank you.